I may not have gone where I intended to go, but I think I've ended up where I intended to be. Douglas Adams.
It was a terrible idea. But we went ahead and we did a single day ascent of Mount Shasta. We started at about 11 p.m., made the summit in 9 hours. There was nobody else out there because the conditions were terrible on the mountain. I remember getting up to about 13,000 feet and looking around me as the sun was coming up and going, what am I doing? This is the dumbest thing I've ever done in my life. And so I ended up making it to the summit. I ended up making it back down. Said I would never ever do that again in my entire life. It was such a miserable experience. But then of course I went back again the next year and was like, I'm gonna climb Mount Shasta again. I'm gonna go a different route though. But I climbed Mount Shasta again.
I'm Doc, and this is the John Freakin' Muir Pod.
Welcome to the John Freakin' Muir Pod. Lace up those boots and sling on the pack for a romp through trails, short and long. With your host and Renaissance man, Doc, it's time to embrace the suck.
Welcome back to another week on the Trail Dirtbags and Hiker Trash. I'm Doc, and this is the John Freakin' Muir Pod. Let's start off with a reminder. If you are enjoying the podcast, take just a minute, help us out, leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. And if you're not enjoying the pod, well, just go ahead and keep that to yourself. All right, let's get to this week's guest. We are in for a real treat because we are talking to a mountain runner, an outdoor guide, and a storyteller who has her own podcast. Welcome to the John Freakin' Muir Pod, Ashley Winchester. How's it going, Ashley?
It's going great. I'm super happy to be here.
And I love how this all came together because initially I received this random DM on Instagram from a guy who says, hey, you should really talk to Ashley Winchester. And so I said, that's a great idea. I'll reach out to her. And then he and I continued our conversation and I had him come on the podcast because he seemed like an interesting guy with some good stories. And I come to find out that Jason Hardrath doesn't just know of you. He knows you very well, doesn't he?
Yeah, I would say so. Yeah, it's so funny how he does that. He'll reach out to other brands and like podcasts and be like, oh, look at this awesome person. She's doing great things. And he never mentions what our relationship is. But yeah, we've been dating for like 4.5 years. So yeah, I'd say he knows me pretty well.
So funny. And then he actually is on the podcast as well now. I mean, you are episode, let's see, I think you're going to be episode 9 and he was episode 5. So spoiler alert, if you haven't listened to season 5, episode 5 yet, with Jason Hardrath, give it a listen. He's got a pretty incredible tale to tell. He's been through some serious challenges and has come out the better for it. So very interesting guy to talk to. And he just has that enthusiasm when he talked. It was a great episode. He's very competitive also. He assured me that his episode would be better than your episode.
Oh, did he?
He did. Yeah.
Well, I actually, I don't want to say that he's probably going to be right, but he is more of a talker than I am. He loves talking in front of people. He loves talking with people, to people. I'm a little bit more introverted. So maybe like he has a little bit more practice than I do, but I don't know. We have very different stories to tell.
Ashley, you're a podcaster. You talk to people.
I do. I know, which is funny because I do consider myself an introvert, but I do talk to people. I'm one of those people where once I have like one of these conversations, like even after we talk tonight, I'll probably have a ton of fun. And then afterwards I'm going to be like, whew, like give me a burrito and let me take a nap.
It's funny because I consider myself an introvert as well. I do okay at social gatherings, but I don't necessarily look forward to them. And it's funny that, you consider yourself an introvert. I consider myself an introvert. And here we are, we're hosting a podcast.
Yeah. Yeah. I know. It's kind of funny how it works out that way, but it is kind of a way where like you can have really great conversations and then you sort of cut them off when you're ready to be done. And then you can take the rest that you need as an introvert. So I think it works out pretty well.
Nice. All right. Hey, I know that your specialty is kind of mountain running, trail running, guiding. Have you picked up a trail name along the way?
No, actually, nothing that has stuck. I've had a couple of people try to give me trail names, and I just didn't really love them, and it just never really stuck. And I haven't found anything trail name wise. I actually just found out not that long ago that you can give yourself a trail name. I didn't know that was part of the like rules.
I think
there
that's
are
a
rules
of the rule. Around. Yeah.
But there are plenty of like famous, you know, like long distance hikers who gave themselves their own names, like Anish. She gave herself that name. And so, I just haven't found anything that really sticks. But the first time I hiked the John Muir Trail, we ended up, you know how you kind of like leapfrog with people on the trail all the time?
Yes.
Well, this guy ended up sort of like joining me and my friend for several days. And he ended up calling me Gazer and called her Blazer because I would stop and look at things like flowers and scenery and butterflies and all the pretty things. Like, yeah, I get distracted really easily and stop and look. And so he called me Gazer. He called her Blazer because she never stopped for anything. She'd take pictures while she was walking and just keep going. But like, I thought it was cute, but it just didn't stick around. Yeah, it just didn't feel right. So no, I don't have a trail name yet.
Okay. And I think Jason also did not have a trail name. And
nope.
I think if I'm remembering correctly, I tried to give him one. We went through several different iterations and we may have come up with Pivot as a possibility, unless I'm misremembering. This could be a completely different episode, but I think it was Pivot, and he seemed to like that one. So,
yeah, that's a good one. That's a good name. Yeah, I like that.
Because I think he was on a trajectory of what he wanted to do, what he wanted to accomplish, and then the accident happened, and mm-hmm. he had to kind of change gears. And so I thought Pivot was he thought it was pretty interesting. I think unless he was just blowing smoke at me. So that's all right.
He's like, yeah, doc, that's great.
Yeah, sounds good. Sounds good.
Take it. So
maybe we'll find one for you tonight too. We'll see.
Yeah. If you can find one for me, that would be fun.
Okay. All right. Now I've been challenged. I always rise to the challenge. So here we go. Hey, Ashley, have you had a chance to listen to the podcast, or are you just coming on blind?
I am coming on blind. I'm
sorry.
Oh,
good, good.
I know. Yes. I'm one of those. I podcast myself, but I don't actually listen to very many podcasts.
Do you listen to your own podcast?
Only when I'm editing.
Same.
Once I'm done editing, it's like, I can't listen to it again.
I used to listen to it, I'd pour myself a cup of coffee and I sit down the morning it came out and I'd listen to it in the backyard with my coffee. And then I've gotten away from that. I listen to it as we're doing it, of course. And then in the post-production editing, and then it's like, okay, done with that one. On to the next one.
Yeah. I just got to let it go. Like a balloon. Just let it go. It's out in the universe now. You can't do anything about it.
Yep. All right. Hey, I only ask because I want to make sure that you are aware of a segment that we have that comes at the end of the episode called the Pro Tip Insight of the Week. And that's where I will turn to you, Ashley, and ask you to share some trail wisdom with our listeners to make their next outdoor experience even better. So don't be surprised when we get there.
Okay. See, I saw that on the schedule that you gave me, and I asked Jason, do I need to worry about this? And he said, no. And I was like, okay.
Jason is very competitive. He is setting you up.
He is. I gotta be on the lookout for him now.
He said that you were pretty competitive as well, though.
In a way, I think I'm more competitive with myself than I am with other people. But yeah, I would say I'm competitive. I mean, why else would I do these things like FKTs and, you know, stage races and stuff like that? Like, there's got to be some kind of competitiveness within me for that. So yeah, I guess he's kind of right. I'll give him that one.
All right. Now, in addition to the trail wisdom at the end of the episode, you're expected to drop trail wisdom throughout the episode. So no pressure, but make sure you save one for the end.
Okay. Okay.
Okay.
The must bring gear review.
All right. Hey, another feature we've been doing this season is the must bring gear review, sponsored by the ultralight backpacking gear company, Six Moon Designs. And here's how it works. Ashley, if you were to let a stranger pack your bag with pretty much generic gear for a multi-day adventure, what is the one specific piece of gear you would insist on being packed? And if you've got a particular brand for that specific piece of gear, even better. So, Ashley, what is your must-bring piece of gear?
So it's kind of funny that the segment is sponsored by Six Moon Designs, because I would say my Six Moon Design Fast Pack has been like one of the most amazing pieces of gear that I've ever gotten. I think that, like, as far as backpacks go, if you can pack pretty much anything into a backpack, if the backpack fits well and sits comfortably, you can use it. You can use whatever that gear is. So even if your gear is a little bit heavier, but you're carrying it in a pack that fits you really well and is really comfortable to carry and carries weight well, then that's like far better than having the most, like, the lightest pieces of gear in a pack that is uncomfortable and doesn't carry well. So honestly, for me, my Six Moon Design minimalist pack is like the piece of gear that I choose for every fast packing adventure that I go on, multi-day adventure, multi-day FKT. It's my go-to. You could probably put whatever inside it. And I think I've carried probably about 30 pounds in it before. And
wow.
It carries pretty comfortably.
Yeah. That's not very minimalist, 30 pounds.
No, but you got to do what you got to do sometimes.
That's right. That's right. So Whitney LaRuffa, AKA All Good, if you're listening to this episode, there you go. Six Moon Designs was called out during the Six Moon Designs segment for the must bring piece of gear. Fantastic. Whitney works for Six Moon Designs. He was a former guest on the podcast. He's a all around great guy. And I hope he's listening to this while he's out on some adventure. All right. Hey, Ashley, I've got this next segment.
It's the hiking pole.
The hiking pole. And that's P-O-L-L, not P-O-L-E. This is pole like a survey, not like the poles you carry in your hands on your adventures out there. I've got two sets of questions, and I'm not sure which one to use with you. So I'm going to ask your opinion. I've got seven questions in either category here. It's going to help me determine your level of sanity. I'm going to give you a score on a scale of 1 to 100, 1 being completely insane and 100 being completely sane. Spoiler alert, nobody's ever gotten 100 before. So the first group of questions has to do with kind of through hiking, backpacking experiences. And so I'm not sure if you said the JMT. So, I mean,
yeah,
you could probably answer those questions. The other set of questions are the big issues in society that we're wrestling with across the world, that we could probably spend an entire segment or maybe even a season on some of these questions. But I just want your initial reaction to see what side of the fence you fall on.
Probably the first side, the backpacking through hiking.
Okay. All right. We'll go with the first set of questions just to share with you what you may have missed out on. I'll pick a single question from the other set to let you know what you missed. One of the possible questions in the second set could be, Ashley, what is your most useful skill in case of a zombie apocalypse?
Oh, those are the kind of,
yeah,
okay, I mean, societal, these are real... mm-hmm. Gotcha. Mm-hmm. Not what I was expecting.
Okay. We don't get political on this podcast. Don't worry about that.
I was like, I am not diving into that territory, whatever that is over there, but that's fun though.
Okay.
Yeah.
Maybe when you come back on again, we can do the other set of questions.
Yeah, definitely. Okay. Next time we'll go for the other set.
Okay. Now, before we get started, what is the name of your podcast?
My podcast is called Women of the Wild. Yeah.
So I was gonna invite myself onto your podcast, but obviously that's probably not gonna work.
Yeah, no, sorry. No? I tend to interview women in the outdoor space who are making waves, doing cool things. I use it to inspire and educate more women, try to get more women into the outdoors, set audacious goals, that kind of a thing. So, yeah, sorry.
Outstanding. Here, I'll give you a suggested guest in case you haven't had her on yet. Cameron Peterson. Cameron, K-A-M-R-I-N. Cameron Peterson.
Okay.
She's doing some guiding up in the Pacific Northwest with just strictly females.
Great. Yeah, love to talk to her.
Good stuff. Good stuff.
Yeah.
All right. Are you ready for this hiking pole?
No, but let's do it.
Okay. Did Jason tell you any of the questions?
No. Jason did not prep me very well for this interview, I guess. But did he also choose that side?
Got to give that guy a high five.
Yeah.
Jason, we went with the hiking questions for him. So,
okay.
All right. First question, easy. And it's not just a one word answer. You have to explain yourself as well.
Okay.
Kind of give me some context to your answer. Cause sometimes I can completely disagree with you and you could talk me into your point of view if you do it well enough.
Okay.
Cause the sanity score is strictly subjective based on what I think is the correct answer.
Right.
Okay.
Okay.
There's no fairness involved here. It's just, you know, what I think. It's my podcast, Ashley. It's not yours.
You can do what you want.
That's right.
Yeah, I get it.
Question number one, trekking poles or no trekking poles?
Trekking poles, 100% trekking poles. No hesitation. I actually wrote an article one time about the use of trekking poles and like mostly in running because it's used a lot in obviously hiking and backpacking. But like running poles and running economy and breathing and stuff like that. It's running or trekking poles can be so, so helpful for so many different reasons. And I think those of us who are like diehard trekking pole people totally get it because like trekking poles kind of essentially give you four-wheel drive for one. So like going up hills, you're like, you can use your trekking poles to push up the hill. You can use them to help kind of brace you and slow you down going downhill. I can't tell you how many times they've saved me from toppling over, like, you know, running or just going down, you know, a hill that's got that kind of loose, like kitty litter kind of dirt and slipping and catching myself with the poles. They keep your body more upright. So you actually breathe better. You have less stress on your back, especially as you fatigue as runners, like we fatigue and we tend to do this thing where we're like starting to hunch over and you see it in backpackers too, you know, backpack weight, they start to kind of, they get, I call it a crump, you know, you just like start to crumple and using trekking poles, like helps keep you upright. You breathe better running economy. I am a big trekking pole fan. And actually, when I first started backpacking and ultra running, I was like super against trekking poles. I was kind of one of those people, like really naive. I was like, that's for old people. I don't need those. But then I did a backpacking trip on the southern portion of the Lost Coast Trail, which is just like unmaintained trail. It's super steep, like up, down. You're in and out of like streams and bushwhacking, and I did not take poles and I regretted it immensely. And from then on, I was like, okay, I'm getting poles. And then I started using them in my running adventures. And it was like, where have these been all my life? Why have I not been using trekking poles? So yeah, I'm a big fan. I use Lakey trekking poles for both backpacking, guiding in the mountains, and for trail running.
Ashley, this is going to be a great interview. I can tell already. We're one question in. We've already hit on four-wheel drive, kitty litter dirt, and the crump. I mean, I might be inclined to give you the trail name of Poet because you just, these are just dripping off of your lips here. This is fantastic.
I love it. Thank you.
All right. Question number two. Boots or trail runners? What's on your feet?
Oh, trail runners, 100% trail runners. So I love boots for people who are just getting started in hiking because they are so supportive. And if you don't have those like ankle stability, like those muscles that help with ankle stability and knee stability developed, then I think that having a little bit of, you know, ankle support in hiking boots might be a good idea. But for me, in my experience, hiking boots tend to leave me with blisters. I I don't like the extra ankle support with the higher top hiking boots. I like my feet to be able to move really naturally. And most hiking boots have, you know, like pretty stiff soles and plates and, you know, all sorts of things in them to make them really rugged. But I really like ground feel. I like to get the feedback from the ground when I'm running or hiking. And so, yeah, I'm a trail runner fan all the way. That being said, when I'm obviously in the mountains and doing like mountaineering objectives, like I'll have mountaineering boots on, and those are super stiff and really rigid. And, but that's a whole different field.
Now, side question, this doesn't count towards these seven questions in the hiking poll. You ever set a FKT in hiking boots?
No, no, I've never set an FKT in hiking boots. I think I've only ever worn trail runners. There was a moment where I had a pair of La Sportiva hiking boots that I was using a lot in like snowy conditions, like up on Mount Shasta and stuff like that. And I don't think I used those during my first Mount Shasta FKT, but I for sure have not used like hiking boots for FKTs other than that.
Okay. Now, another question not related to the hiking pole. What's on your hat? I can't quite tell what the logo is there.
It's Path Projects. Yeah. Path Projects.
Oh, Path, not Bath.
No, not Bath. Path. P-A-T-H.
Path with a P. Got it.
Like okay. You're following a path.
Got it. That's very, yeah. Very in sync with what we're talking about. Okay. Question three, when it comes to shelter systems out there, are you favorable to a tent, tarp, hammock, bivy, or hey, let's just cowboy camp?
Ooh, it totally depends on the situation. I've done a ton of cowboy camping. When I do like big, long FKTs that might require me to sleep out overnight, usually I'm not sleeping for very long. I'm sleeping for, you know, maybe a max of 2 hours, minimum of like 8 minutes. And so setting up any kind of, you know, like a tent or tarp is just more time consuming than what it's worth.
Is that called a dirt nap?
Yeah. Sometimes it's just a dirt nap. You just like lay on the ground. Mm-hmm. But I usually have some kind of bivy, like an emergency bivy at least, that I'll throw out on a like a Z pad or something. Especially like during my John Muir Trail FKT that I did this last summer, I had a half of a Z pad that I used just for my torso, and then an emergency bivy that I put my body in for a little bit of warmth, and then I'd sleep for 20 minutes and then get up, could pack it all up really, really fast. I mean, I've cowboy camped a ton in that sense. There have been some FKTs where, you know, I did sleep for a full night and it was like, yeah, we're just going to cowboy camp, you know, sleep out in the desert on some slick rock and, you know, find a comfy spot and just gaze at the stars for a little while. But then I've also, you know, I use tents a lot, especially as a backpacking guide, introducing people into the outdoors. They usually feel more comfortable with pretty sturdy tents. And so, you know, we usually use tents for that. I have used a tarp in the past, but I find if you have, you know, as a guide, if you have a lot of gear, even if you're just like backpacking in a more traditional manner, rather than fast packing, then you have a lot of gear. You're going to want to, I usually yard sale everything out. Like everything comes out of my bag and ends up to spread everywhere. It's better for me to do that inside a tent than, you know, under a tarp. And it's like so
pack explosion.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So I think, I mean, I'm not sold on any one way to do it. I do like cowboy camping. But comfort wise, I feel like sometimes they're more comfortable in a tent.
Okay. Now I'm really excited because, like you, I didn't do a whole lot of research. I relied on the word of Jason when he says, hey, you need to talk to her. She's pretty interesting. She's done some pretty incredible stuff. I am just now finding out that you're the current female holder of the FKT on the JMT.
on the southbound solo unsupported. Yeah. John Muir Trail.
Yeah. Don't put all those qualifiers in there. I don't know. You're FKT on the JMT. I have also talked in end of season four with Jeff Garmeyer, who just set the overall FKT on the JMT.
Yeah. He crashed it.
It's insanity. Insanity. Yeah. I think I talk about that at least once a day with somebody, just some random person. Hey, Garmeyer, 72 hours and 47 minutes on the JMT. And they look at me like, what language are you talking? What do you mean?
Yeah. And
it's just insane. Yeah.
3 days, 3 days for 223 miles. Yeah.
That's 70 miles a day.
Mm-hmm. Yep. That's absolutely nuts. And I don't know how he did it. Like, he just completely put everything he had out there, like everything. Like, he just did not hold back. And it's pretty incredible. Incredible feat.
So I'm going to go out there right now, and I'm going to say that this is the only podcast to have the male and female FKTs of the JMT as guests on the podcast. So there you go.
Well, I mean, how could you not? You're the John freaking Muir podcast, right?
That's right.
Kind of makes sense.
Makes a lot of sense. All right. Hey, where were we? Is this question four? Question four, I think.
Yeah, four.
Yeah. So when you do more than a dirt nap out there, do you prefer a sleeping bag or a quilt?
Ooh. I've used a sleeping bag more, but I think that I would probably say quilt. They tend to be a little bit lighter, and maybe because without the zipper, you can maybe go a little bit warmer. And I like to be warm when I sleep. So I think I would kind of lean towards the quilt. During one of my FKTs, it was actually the Tuck Up Trail, which is on the north rim of the Grand Canyon. It's a super remote trail. It's not really a trail. It's more of like a route finding extravaganza. It's phenomenal, but it's super remote. My friend and I, Sunny Strower, did the FKT on that, and she had a quilt and I had a sleeping bag, and I was really jealous of her quilt. And she might be somebody you could have on your podcast too. She's amazing. She runs a guiding company. She runs two guiding companies. One's an expedition company for women, like all women's expedition. It's called Awe Expeditions. And then she and her husband have Dreamland Safari down in Utah, and they take people out on like desert adventures. But yeah, so she spends a ton of time out there in the desert. And I was actually really jealous of her quilt that she had. I thought they're kind of brilliant the way they work. And just, you know, not having the zipper. And I feel like sometimes like being out there, especially if you're alone or with limited resources, zippers are just another thing that can fail. It's just another piece of gear that can break on you. And so having something that's supposed to function without a zipper kind of makes some sense to me.
Okay. And what was her name again?
Sunny Strower. So her last name is spelled Stroeer.
All right. I like this.
She's great. I've had her on my podcast twice. On my podcast three times.
Nice.
She's amazing.
Sunny Strower. I'll reach out. I'm going to drop your name.
Yeah, please do. She'll be Ashley.
I'm going to say the poet recommended I talk to you. And she'll say, who is the poet? I'll give you, we'll keep trading guests all night long here. I'll give you another one for your podcast, Lael Wilcox. Have you heard of her?
She's on my list. Yes.
Have you interviewed her?
I have not interviewed her, but she's on my list to interview.
So good. She got some stories. Let me tell you, she's incredible. Yeah. Yeah.
Awesome.
Really good. Really, really good.
Yeah. I'll have to reach out to her. I think I've reached out to her once before and she was like, yeah, I'll totally come on. And then I dropped the ball. But yeah, I'll have to have her on the podcast for sure.
Okay. Question five. When it comes to food out there on the trail, are you stove, cold soak, or stoveless?
Again, it depends. I have totally done the cold soak route, but I don't recommend it. it's not exactly good. It's just, it's enough. It's like good enough. But if you're, you know, doing a multi-day adventure where you want to move fast or want to cover a lot of mileage and pack weight really, really matters, then not having a stove, I think is a good way to go. I love having hot meals when I'm backpacking. So if I'm just backpacking and I'm not necessarily, you know, trying to cover 30 or 50 miles a day, then yeah, I'll totally bring a stove. And I really love the Peak Refuel dehydrated meals. They're my favorite. And they're so good and they're so filling. And it kind of depends. I've also, you know, gone a few days just eating snack food, no cold soaking, no meals, just a lot of high calorie snacks.
Yeah. Mrs. Doc took a business trip for a week and I went stoveless as well. I wasn't out on the trail. I was just on the couch, but you know, that's how
Oh my gosh. Have you ever eaten a backpacking meal while sitting on a couch? Like I'm too lazy or just like I can't function or something. I'm just going to heat up some water and make a backpacking meal.
A ramen bomb.
Yes. I actually, I was in Bhutan recently and I like locked myself in my hotel room and I didn't feel like calling or like looking at a menu to get any kind of room service. So I happened to have a Peak Refuel meal with me and I was like, this is what I'm having for dinner. I mean, it was just one of those nights.
All right. Question number six, is life better above or below the tree line?
Sorry. Is life better above or below the tree line? I think life can be a little easier below the tree line, but I really love being above the tree line, if that makes sense. I think, I mean, obviously like below tree line, you're less exposed to weather elements. There are more resources. You usually have, you know, depending on where you're at, access to water. I think cover is like kind of a big deal. When you're above tree line, you're in it and whatever elements come at you, like you just kind of have to deal with it. And I love that about being above tree line. I like kind of that exposure, but it is definitely a lot less comfortable than being below tree line. So I don't know if that answers your question.
You kind of got there. I'll factor that into the score. All right, last question. Question number seven, what's more important? I know the answer to this question already for you. What's more important, pack weight or luxury items?
Pack weight, I think.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
I mean, for FKTs, I want to go as light as possible. Mm-hmm. When I'm guiding a backpacking trip, though, I'm all about comfort and I want my luxury items. Because, you know, I'm out there, I'm working basically. And I have to be able to take care of myself really well in order to take care of, you know, the 8 to 12 other people that I'm in charge of. And so for me, when I'm guiding, I really want my luxury items. I want to sleep really well. I want to be comfortable. I want to make sure I'm eating well. But then, you know, when I'm doing my own objectives, comfort, luxury, it's out the window. Mm-hmm.
Got it. All right. Now, Ashley, bear with me. I've got to do some math here. I got to put your answers through the John Freaky Muir algorithm. So I got to carry the 3, got to divide by √2. We're going to multiply by pi, and then we're going to adjust for the atmospheric pressure at the top of Whitney. And you come out with a solid score of 57.
57?
57. There's an automatic point deduction for anybody who does an FKT out there. So sorry.
Oh.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Is it a point deduction per FKT or is it just like you have?
You know,
FKT?
I wanted to give you some points. So I just did just one deduction.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay. So I have to ask, do you remember what Jason's score is?
Oh, I've got it written down here in my handy dandy notebook. Let me go back here. You scored 9 points higher.
Really?
He was a 48. Yeah.
Whoa. Wow. So I'm crazier than Jason?
No. You're a little more sane. The higher the score, the saner you are. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Does that make sense in your relationship? Are you the sane one in the relationship?
Yeah, I would say I'm the one who I speak a little bit more reason into things than Jason's a dreamer. You know, he comes up with these crazy ideas and, you know, sometimes they're great and they work really well. And sometimes I kind of have to be like, well, let's think about this for a second. So yeah, it makes sense.
Okay. Hey, before we get too far down the trail, Ash, let's back up a little bit. Let's talk about your background, where you grew up, what kinds of sports and hobbies did you play as a kid, and how did you get involved in the outdoor adventure cult?
Oh, yeah. So I grew up in a small town in Northern California called Boonville, B-O-O-N-V-I-L-L-E.
Like
down
in
the boonies.
Out in the boonies.
Yep.
There you go. Okay.
It's out in the boonies. It's kind of on the like far northern coast, but a little bit more inland. So it's like not right on the ocean, but in this beautiful little valley. And I was really fortunate to grow up the way that I did because I had access to a lot of acreage. My dad worked in the wine industry. He grew grapes, which I know that sounds like pretty romantic, but it's a really hard industry to be in. He was basically a farmer. So, you know, he worked 20-hour days in the dust and the sun and, you know, around chemicals. And it's a really, really hard job. So I just don't, you know, like whenever I tell people like, oh yeah, my dad was a vineyard manager, people are like, wow, that must have been amazing. Oh, grapes and da da da. And I'm like, it's really hard. So like agriculture family kind of is what I'm saying. And so, but we had access to all of that land that the grapes were being grown on. And one of the properties that we lived on was like 990 acres. And not a lot of that, a very small percentage of that was actually grapes. And so we had access to wild land when I was a kid. And my mom basically would just kick me and my brother out the door. Like I have an older brother and a younger sister. My sister is 7 years younger than I am. So my brother and I did a lot together. We were only a year and a half apart. And my mom would just kick us out the door, go play, and we would take off into the wilderness, basically. And like, you know, she taught us survival skills. We knew how to forage. We knew how to, you know, avoid animals. Like we had mountain lions, and bears, and rattlesnakes out there. And, we learned at very young ages how to handle ourselves in the wilderness. And I definitely know that that plays a lot in what I do now and my level of comfort being out in the wilderness, especially alone. So yeah, I grew up running around barefoot, probably half naked, climbing trees, you know, running along the trails, that kind of a thing. Our, like family vacations was camping. And so, you know, we'd go out and camp and my brother, you know, we'd do the same thing. We'd take off, we'd ride our bikes, we'd take the boat out, we'd go fishing. And we also did a lot of hunting when I was a kid. So just a lot of survival skills from a very young age. And then as far as sports go, I played softball in high school. That was kind of what I did. I was a cheerleader. You can call that a sport if you want to. I'm not going to argue about it, but so softball, cheerleading was kind of my main sports. I hated running when I was younger. I just thought it was the worst activity in the world. I did not understand all of the kids who were doing like cross country, and I didn't get it. I was like, why would you want to run? I hated running the mile in PE, you know? So I didn't actually get into running until my mid-20s. But yeah, that's kind of
similar. So I didn't like running at all. I'm still not sure that I like running, but I do it multiple times a week. I didn't get into running until my mid 40s though. So
yeah, it's never too late. It's never too late.
That's right. Yeah. There you go. That's your first bit of trail wisdom right there. Never too late.
Yeah.
And you know what I love about your answers are that you went sequentially in the order that I asked them. Some people, I'll ask that multi-part question there, and they'll start with the last thing I mentioned and kind of work their way backwards, which is always confusing to me. But this is a check in the right column for you. So good work.
Oh boy. Yeah. Okay.
It doesn't change your score. You're still 57, but you know, it just kind of reinforces that.
But did I answer all the questions? That's what I'm wondering.
I think you hit on all four parts. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Yep. Nice job.
Well, you did ask me, how did I get into like more of the adventure stuff that I'm doing now, which.
Well, yeah, we didn't quite get there, but I mean, just growing up with that kind of wilderness in your backyard, I mean, that kind of, I thought that's how you answered it. But if there's more, we're going to hit that in the next segment.
Okay.
We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll hear a little more about that. And we're going to get into some of your adventures, some of your FKTs, what happened in Bhutan. I have all kinds of questions for you. So stay tuned for that. We'll be right back.
From the backcountry to the backyard, we believe everyone deserves the highest level of protection. Since 1984, Sawyer Products offers the best, most technologically advanced solutions for protection against sun, bugs, and water, using time-released liposome technology, topical insect repellents, and new standards in water filtration. And with every Sawyer product you buy, you are helping to provide clean water through 140 charities in 80 countries with their long-lasting water filters. Every Sawyer product you buy is an investment in our common humanity. Choose Sawyer and keep the adventure going, knowing that their products have been tested and chosen by those who count on serious protection on the trail all day long. Six Moon Designs has been innovating ultralight backpacking gear for the past 20 years. With a wide range of products ranging from ultralight shelters to backpacks and accessories like their extensive line of trekking umbrellas, Six Moon Designs is sure to have a great piece of gear for your needs. With the company philosophy being that gear should aid one's experience, not define it, Six Moon Designs thinks the more time people spend outside the natural world, the better off this world will be. And remember, go wild, live young. This episode is sponsored by Jolly Gear. Are you tired of compromising between the ventilation of a button-down and the full protection of a sun hoodie? With the Triple Crown button-down, you can have the best of both. Plus, their fun standout patterns will have you the talk of the trail. Visit them at jollygear.com. Through hiker owned, Jolly Gear, where fun meets functional.
And welcome back. We are talking to Ashley, no trail name, Winchester. And we heard a little bit about her growing up, and she did a fantastic job on the hiking pole. We feel like we're a little bit short in one area, though. You have more to tell us about how you got involved in outdoor adventure. How did that all change for you?
So I told you that I kind of grew up with more conventional sports. I didn't actually start running until my mid-20s, and I didn't find trail running until maybe a year or so after I started running. And it's kind of funny how it came about, because I've always been an outdoorsy person. I've always loved hiking, camping, that kind of a thing. But the idea of trail running just never occurred to me until I was actually out on a training run, and I was jogging on the like road that went through the local park just in the town. And I noticed this like little dirt trail off to the side across the creek. And for some reason, part of me was like, I want to go run on that trail. And so I just like walked across the creek in my running shoes, got on the trail and started jogging. And I had the most fun I've ever had in my life, just on this like rolling, buttery single track. And
Ashley, that's how most horror movies start.
No, this is a romance.
Oh, it's a rom-com. It's not
a
horror story.
It's a rom-com. Yeah, this is not a horror story. Yeah, my life is romantic and full of comedy. So I hit this wonderful trail, and I was just like, why have I not done this before? So I started running trails, and I just got super addicted. And this is like pretty common story for a lot of trail runners, where it was like, started running on roads, and then wow, all of a sudden I hit this trail, and it was like mind blowing and life changing. And so, started obsessing about trails, started running races, running ultra marathons. And then, I finally was like, well, why haven't I like gotten into backpacking, rock climbing? It was just like, I want to do everything. I want to do everything outdoors. Any adventure that came my way, I just said yes to it. And so a friend invited me to go rock climbing, and I was like, yeah, I'll go rock climbing. And then I fell in love with that. And then I was like, you know what? I want to go backpacking. So borrowed a bunch of gear from somebody, went backpacking, and was like, wow, I really love this. And it actually like, that my first backpacking experience changed my whole life trajectory, because I was actually thinking, I was like going back to school to go to nursing school. And I went backpacking one time and was like, no, I need to spend my life outdoors. Like, this is my calling. This is what I need to be doing. And then it was like, my friend was like, do you want to go climb Mount Shasta? And I was like, yes, I'll climb Mount Shasta. I had no idea what to expect. I knew nothing about the mountain. I just blindly followed her into it, which is not a smart way to start mountaineering. I rented all of my mountaineering gear the day before. I'd never used any of it before. I'd never used an ice axe or crampons or anything like that. YouTube video, how to self-arrest with an ice axe. It was a terrible idea. But we went ahead and we did a single day ascent of Mount Shasta. We started at about 11 p.m., made the summit in 9 hours. There was nobody else out there because the conditions were terrible on the mountain. I remember getting up to about 13,000 feet and looking around me as the sun was coming up and going, what am I doing? This is the dumbest thing I've ever done in my life. And so I ended up making it to the summit. I ended up making it back down. Said I would never ever do that again in my entire life. It was such a miserable experience. But then of course I went back again the next year and was like, I'm going to climb Mount Shasta again. I'm going to go a different route though. But I climbed Mount Shasta again. And then I really started like learning all of the skills involved with mountaineering and, you know, climbing and all of that. And slowly over a couple of years, just fell in love with that mountain specifically and mountaineering. And so that's how I kind of got into mountaineering. And now I'm a guide. I guide on Mount Shasta.
So let me pause you right there. We've got a lot to talk about right there. I've got a lot of questions and comments on this. First is, when you do your podcasts, how do you select an episode title? How do you figure out what you're going to call the episode?
I went from naming all of the episodes to just having the name of the guest as the name of the episode. I felt like that simplified it. And also when it came to the graphic design of the...
Oh, you're fancy. You got graphic design for each episode? Holy smokes.
I
look for my titles during the course of the conversation. And I think you said something perfect that just really jumped out at me. I want to do everything. This is season 5, episode 9. I want to do everything - Ashley Winchester. That's the episode right there.
That's good. Yeah. I like it.
I've come across, I have a trail name for you. Now it's up to you whether you accept it or not, but we're talking about doing things just on pure, I don't know, instinct, instant reaction, impetuousness. I mean, you take the dirt track. I don't know where that goes, but I'm going to run on that. You head up to the top of Shasta with no preparation whatsoever, other than watching a couple of YouTube videos. You come on the JFM pod without having any idea what you're getting yourself into. I think your trail name is Leap, as in leap before you look. it seems to be a theme with you. Pivot and leap. I like it.
Yeah, maybe. But that does make me think. So I've adopted this saying that I use throughout my John Muir Trail FKT, and it was all heart. And because I tend to go into things with my heart rather than my brain sometimes. And also, I feel like if you go into something with your whole heart, your all heart, you'll be able to pull through, make it through, make miracles happen. That's what happened to me on the John Muir Trail. And so I actually have all heart tattooed on my arm, and it's kind of become my thing. So I don't know if that's a good name, all heart, but.
Okay, I like it. All right, now we have bandied about this acronym for quite a bit during this episode, FKT. If there are some listeners out there who have just stumbled across the JFM pod, have no idea the things we talk about, but they're listening anyway because we're just two interesting people. Help us define, you know, what is an FKT, Ashley?
Yeah, so FKT stands for fastest known time. And a fastest known time is basically what it sounds like. It is the fastest time that has been put down on a established route. And that route could be, you know, something like the Pacific Crest Trail, which has some crazy fast times on it, or something as short as like a 5-mile loop in, you know, the state park that's near your house. The thing about these routes is that they have to be considered classic and something that somebody would want to maybe travel to the area from out of town to go and do. So you can't just do like, you know, an FKT on your local 5K run around the block. Like that might work fine for a Strava segment, but that doesn't really work for like an FKT. FKTs need to be something that is like, you want to show, you know, it's something that showcases the beauty, the great things about a certain area. And so there are new FKT routes being established all the time and submitted to the fastestknowntime.com website. And you can totally do that. I've created and submitted new routes, but there are literally thousands of routes on the website that you can go look them up, check them out, see if you can put a faster time down.
So you beat me to the question. I was going to ask you, is there an organization that keeps track of these, knowing full well that there is, but you already made that point. So nice job there. And I had the chance to talk to Buzz Burrell on the podcast. Buzz Burrell is the person who
founder
of FKT. He says that he didn't really coin the term, but he was just involved in the early stages. He gives credit to his partner early on, but he was really fun to talk to. He had some pretty crazy stories.
Yeah, he's a character. He interviewed me and Jason a couple of times for the FKT podcast that he used to, he was in charge of. Now, actually, Heather Anderson is the host of that podcast.
Nice.
Yeah.
All right. Now let's talk about your favorite topic and my favorite topic. I think your favorite topic is FKT. My favorite topic is the JMT. Let's combine those two and talk about your experience on the JMT. How did that go? Where did you come up with the idea of, hey, let's try and set the southbound, all those qualifiers you gave it, FKT, the John Muir Trail?
Yeah. So, well, what's funny is the John Muir Trail FKT was the first FKT that I'd ever heard of. It was like, when I first heard a fastest known time was because of the fastest known time that was put on the John Muir Trail. I don't know how many years ago, but it was one of those things where back then I was just starting to get into running and I was like, man, that would be cool, but I would never be able to do that. You know, that's something for elite professional ultra runners. Like I'll never be able to do that. And, you know, fast forward some years, I've been doing ultra running for some time, backpacking for some time. I actually, in 2019, went to backpack the John Muir Trail, and my friend and I did it in 16 days. It was a crazy adventure because it was early July of 2019, which was a pretty significant snow year in the Sierra, and the like 50% of the trail was under snow. And we were actually breaking trail in some areas because people were bailing out so much. Like there were no footprints to follow in some areas. So we were route finding in the snow. The water levels were super high because, you know, it's July, things start melting. So the water crossings were absolutely insane. And I finished that 16 days and was like, I want to fast pack that. I want to do it in 7 days. And kind of put it in the back of my mind for a little while and was like, well, that's something for future Ashley to do. You know, the idea of actually doing the FKT didn't really occur to me until obviously I started doing FKTs, and I started really like looking at times on some of these longer trails. And I noticed that the southbound time for the women's unsupported, solo unsupported, southbound time was like pretty beatable. And I sort of set my sights on that and was like, well, that would be a really cool thing to do when I fast pack this trail someday. And then I actually last year, the summer of 2021, I ended up with a permit for the John Muir Trail out of Happy Isles, which is the official start, the northern terminus of the trail. And, you know, it was the exact permit that I needed. I happened to get it in the lottery and I was like, great, I'm going to fast pack this thing. Maybe I'll get the FKT. And then as the year wore on, I was sort of like, you know what, I'm going to go for the FKT. 1 week before I was supposed to start that trip, I actually, it got canceled because of fires. And so I was like, pretty devastated because I felt like I had decent training throughout the summer. I had supported Jason during his Boulders FKT by carrying, you know, heavy packs, big miles, lots of vert. I felt pretty strong coming out of that summer, and just to have it canceled a week before I was supposed to start. And so I kind of was like, well, you know, we'll see, maybe I'll get the permit this coming season. For the next year, applied for a permit, didn't get it. And I was like, okay, that's fine. I had a really, really rough start to this year. I actually was guiding down in Argentina, on a big mountain called Aconcagua in January, and our whole team, ended up getting COVID, and we were at camp 2 when that happened, which is, about 18,000 feet of elevation. And so everybody's sick with COVID, a lung disease at 18,000 feet. And so I actually ended up coughing my way into a pretty gnarly rib injury. I pulled a bunch of intercostal muscles in my ribs, and I was out for like 6 weeks. I couldn't train. I couldn't breathe. I couldn't sleep. It was some of the worst pain I've ever experienced in my life. After I finally recovered from that, I got really sick, probably from the flu. I tested negative for COVID, but that took me out for another 5 weeks. And then I ended up getting COVID again. And it had some pretty long standing, like long COVID type symptoms for a couple of months. And I was actually just starting to get back into training when I decided to just check and see if there was a permit available for the John Muir Trail out of Happy Isles. And so I log into recreation.gov, look at the permits, and there's one available. And I just snagged it. I was like, oh my gosh, I don't care what day it is. I don't care. Like, I'm just gonna, I need this permit. I got the permit. And then I was like, oh, what did I just do? It was for a week from that day. I hadn't trained at all. And I was thinking about doing a fast pack / FKT of a 220-mile trail. And I totally panicked, but I was also like, I need to do this. Like, I have to. There's no other choice. So I actually
leaped right into it. See that?
I did.
Yeah.
I know.
Or is that, that's leapt. You leapt into it.
Leapt. 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 Tomato, tomato. But so I actually, that week before the starting the JMT, I actually was guiding a backpacking trip for 4 days. And then I had like a day of travel and then a day to prep for this 220 mile trail. And so I put all my stuff together. I have the gear that is kind of my tried and true stuff, and threw together a bunch of food. I rented a bear canister and packed up my 6-man design bag and was on trail the next day.
What was your pack weight?
I have no idea.
No idea. Didn't want to know.
It's not that I didn't want to know. It's that I, because I packed in such a hectic manner, I didn't have a scale or anywhere to weigh it. And I didn't see one in Yosemite. You know how sometimes at trailheads, you'll see those scales hanging. They have them at Whitney Portal. And I just didn't, and it didn't matter anyway, because my gear was my gear and I wasn't going to be able to change it, within a couple of hours of starting. So it was sort of like, it's just, we're going to huck this and see what happens.
Yes. And so what was the previous record? What was the previous FKT?
It was like 6 days and 12 hours, I think. And so my goal, like my ultimate goal, was to do the whole thing in under 7 days. I wasn't necessarily expecting to get the FKT, but I thought that I could try for it. And if it happened, it would be a really cool outcome. But I also knew going into it that I had almost zero training, leading into it. I was just really going all in on nothing. And so, I mean, I had my base fitness, but, you know, there was no specific training. I had almost no high mileage weeks, for 6 months before, you know, jumping into this thing. And, there was no weighing my pack. It wasn't going to change anything. I know that's like one of the first questions people ask me is, what was your pack weight? I have no clue. I think it was maybe under 10 pounds. I'm not sure though.
Okay. Now, how long did it take you? What was the end result?
So it took me 5 days, 20 hours to get from Happy Isles to the summit of Mount Whitney. So that's like the official start and the official end of the trail, Northern and Southern Terminus. FKT includes that descent from the summit of Whitney to Whitney Portal, which is like an additional 11 miles. At the time though, it wasn't included. That last little bit, the last 11 miles, was not really included in the whole FKT. And so I submitted it as, you know, from trailhead to summit, like the other athletes had done before me. And then once String Bean and Jeff Garmeyer did the FKT back to back, they decided to like really solidify the rules surrounding the southbound FKT. And so they had me change my time. So it ended up being 6 days and 4 hours, or 6 days, 4 hours, from trailhead to trailhead. But I would prefer that the John Muir Trail FKT be the whole John Muir Trail,
John
and
Muir
not
Trail.
A John Muir Trail plus a little bit. That's me personally. And I know some of the other athletes who had done it like agree, but because they want to just make sure everybody plays by the same rules and that it's standardized, they decided to make it go from trailhead to trailhead. So there was a little bit of like confusion there at first. My time when it first went up on the website was 5 days, 20 hours. And then it got changed a few weeks later to 6 days, 4 hours, I think. So,
well, I am a John Muir Trail purist, and for what it's worth, probably not a whole lot, but you know, I think it should be from the trailhead to the summit. I mean, that is the official John Muir Trail. The other part, you just have to get off the mountain to get back to, you know, civilization, but you know, it's no longer the John Muir Trail.
Yeah, I tend to agree, but I mean, it makes sense to want to standardize it. That's sort of most of the FKTs that have been done on the trail have been done from Whitney Portal going northbound. And they've all been, and that's like the most competitive direction to go. Mm-hmm. And all of those FKTs have been submitted trailhead to trailhead. So in order to standardize everything, they wanted to make sure that southbound was the same as northbound. They decided to tack on that, you know, the last bit. So it is what it is. You have to complete those miles anyway. So I guess it makes sense. A lot of FKTs go trailhead to trailhead. I mean, it's like a really clean way to, you know, mark beginning and end. So it makes some sense.
Yeah, it would have been a real shame if you decided to take a 3-day pause at the bottom of the 99 switchbacks, right? Then you're like,
I know.
I didn't get it. I didn't.
Yeah. No, and I totally wanted to. I actually thought about seeing if Jason would hike up to trail camp there and bring a tent so that I could take a night off there. I actually got to the summit of Whitney. The day before, there was this kind of like gnarly wind, rain, hailstorm that came through, and the summit of Whitney was icy and there were some slick rocks up there. And I got up there, I think I kind of like let my guard down because it was sort of like, oh my gosh, I did it. You know, I relaxed, slipped on a rock, pulled a muscle in my quad, like immediately. And I kind of was like, well, it's a good thing I'm done, you know, because it was really rough getting down that mountain. I couldn't step down with my left leg. Like it was useless. And so it took a long time to get down.
That could have been a disaster. Holy smokes.
I know. I could have totally missed the FKT.
Yeah. And you know, as a mountaineer, I think the percentage is like 60 to 70% of all mountaineering injuries, or maybe it's deaths, happen on the way down because they you feel like you summit. Okay, I've done all the hard work. It's just going down now. And they kind of let down their guard a little bit. And that's when all the serious bad stuff happens.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's something that I teach when I'm, you know, out there on the mountain and taking people up and down mountains. But after 200 miles, it was sort of, I think I was done. I was ready to be done. And I think I let my guard down a little bit and let myself slip. But I got down. I was fine. I healed up within a few weeks. I was totally okay.
And you got done quick enough that you're able to still qualify for the FKT. So congratulations.
Yes.
That's very exciting.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. It was a wild experience. I mean, I've never experienced that much sleep deprivation before. And the hallucinations that came along with that were intense.
Okay, good. Yeah. I wasn't sure how sleep deprived you were or if you hallucinated. Garmeyer really didn't have a whole lot of hallucination stories. What kind of hallucinations did you have out there?
Oh my gosh. I had so many hallucinations. So the hallucination started on like night two. Because I had this like plan to sleep a chunk of every night, thinking that I would get, you know, maybe 4 hours of sleep a night. And I feel like 4 hours of sleep a night is pretty sustainable for a week or maybe more. Especially like when you're pushing your body. And so I thought, you know, like I'm going to sleep for 4 hours a night. I'm going to move for 20 hours a day. And the first night I laid down to sleep and was like, yeah, I can't sleep for 4 hours. I was uncomfortable. After about 30 minutes, I was tossing and turning and I kind of was like, why am I doing this? So I changed my tactic to just take dirt naps or bivy whenever I got so tired that I was falling asleep on my feet. And so I actually, I hardly slept at all during the whole thing. I think I slept maybe an hour a day, all added up, and maybe got 6 hours of sleep during the whole entire thing. And when you're when you're pushing your body kind of constantly and not sleeping, that really makes for some interesting experiences.
That's pretty impressive. Garmeyer, I think, said he got an hour and a half of sleep each day. That was for 3 days, though. So you got 4.5 hours of sleep for 3 days. You only got 6 hours of sleep for five plus days. I think that's crazy.
Yeah. Well, and like, so I would have gotten more sleep and more rest if I had been able to move faster. I was moving really slow during the days because it like there was this heat wave and I couldn't move fast, especially up the big climbs. It was just so hot. I stopped at every stream and was like splashing water on my face and, you know, drinking tons of water. And I just felt super dehydrated and my electrolytes were off for a couple of days. I could feel it. And, just moving really, really, really slow. And so in order to make up for that, I had to move as much as I could through the night while it was cool. And so, yeah, that's why I ended up like not sleeping very much.
So what did you see out there? Or what did you think you saw?
I saw so really interesting things, actually. The first thing that comes to mind that I remember is, so there's a section of trail and there were pine cones everywhere. My mind turned those pine cones into hermit crabs. And so they were like these hermit crabs with a pine cone as a shell, if you can imagine that. And I could not stand the sound of the crunching if I stepped on them. And so I was like kind of skipping along this trail, trying to avoid stepping on all these pine cones because the pine cones were actually hermit crabs. And if I stepped on them, I was crunching them. That just felt terrible. So that was one of them. That was one of them.
I'm going to have nightmares tonight.
There was a period of time too, where I just saw bears everywhere. You know, I'd look around and there'd be like 20 bears. And I'm like, I know that that's pretty much impossible, that there can be that many bears in one area for us like this. And one thing that I learned was that my mind is very rational. And so when I'd see these things, I would pick them apart and just kind of be like, no, that's not possible. So like with the hermit crab pine cones, I saw them and I was like, oh, I can't step on them. And then there was this rational part of my brain that was like, hermit crabs don't live here. We're in the mountains. Like that's impossible. And so I was able, like the hallucination went away. And with the bears, it was kind of the same thing. It's like, well, there can't be that many bears around me. Like, and so I started seeing bears everywhere. And if they were frozen, if they were stood totally still and didn't move, I knew that they were probably my hallucinations. And then there was another time where I saw really weird things, like little dogs in like biker jackets. They were like these pugs that had these like little leather jackets on. And I was like, what are you doing out here, buddy? It was the most ridiculous thing. But there were two other things that like really come to mind when I think about my hallucinations. And one of those was what I call my shadow puppy. It was a giant black wolf that was so realistic looking to me. I remember I saw it on the Coyote Plateau, and it was in the forest, and I was staring at this thing, and it's staring back at me. And I was like, it looked like the fur was like moving in the wind. I mean, it was like, it was so realistic that I actually like yelled at it. I clapped my hands and it was like, yo, wolf, you know, like get out of here. And like, it didn't flinch. And so that was my first indicator. I was like, okay, it didn't move. It probably isn't real. And then I thought about it and I was like, there also are not giant black wolves in the Sierra. Like they just don't exist here. And so that was the other thing. So I was able to just turn away from it and keep walking. I had this like, I kept turning around and like seeing glimpses of it over my shoulder, and then it would disappear. So I called it my shadow puppy because it was like my shadow, the black wolf that was following me, but it never felt it never felt like it was malicious. And so I was able to just ignore it. But that was the night I actually messaged Jason on the inReach, and I told him, keep an eye on my dot, because, you know, on the GPS tracking, things are getting weird out here. And so I just wanted, like, I needed somebody to make sure that they were keeping an eye on me overnight, because we were heading into the night. And then that night, I went through this, you go through this area of forest that is full of like this really white granite, just like big granite, white granite, sparkling granite. It's everywhere. And at first I was like, wow, this is magical. It's so pretty. And then the sun set and the granite turned into like pieces of porcelain sculptures that had broken apart. And so like the sound of the granite under my feet sounded like breaking porcelain. And I'd look around and there was like chunks of dolls and heads and, you know, pieces of these like porcelain sculptures just everywhere. And it like, that was the night where I was like, wow, things are really weird right now. that was my last night out there. And I just kind of was like, just keep following the trail. Just keep following the trail. Like ignore what's going on around you. You know, it's not real. I'll just keep following the trail. And so actually when I got to Guitar Lake, I took a 20-minute nap there because I knew, I was like, I'm about to start this climb up Mount Whitney. I really need to be a little bit more like on it, a little bit more awake than this. So I took a quick nap at Guitar Lake and then started my ascent.
I want to say that these hallucinations that you've described to us kind of open a, it's like an open window to your soul and what's going on in that mind of yours. And I'm not sure what it all means, but I had fun listening to it.
I've been thinking about that for months now. Like, what did it all mean? Like, why did my mind choose those things to like create out of whatever was out there? Like, why porcelain? Why sculptures? Why hermit crabs?
Yeah, you know, Garmeyer found himself asleep in the pumice next to I think this Tyndall Creek, and he doesn't remember going to sleep. He actually, you know, fell asleep while he was upright, and woke up on the ground, which is just bizarre. I mean, that's how much pressure you're putting on your body and your mind out there trying to do what you do.
Yeah, it's crazy what happens. And everybody's different. Like all the ultra runners that I've talked to who have done big multi-day things like that and experienced hallucinations, everybody's different. Some people it's auditory, some people it's visual. It's bizarre.
That is fantastic. Do you have a favorite moment? Not on the FKT, but in the Sierras. I mean, combine your JMT experiences. Did you have a favorite moment, a favorite location out there?
So my favorite location, I would say it's probably hands down the section of trail that goes underneath the Palisades. I think it's the Palisades, the Palisade Crest. Mm-hmm. That is like one of my favorite places ever, with those huge peaks towering above you and these beautiful lakes around you. And the way the trail goes along those ledges of rock, it's just, I think it's so, it's like, even if both times that I've done the trail, it's been my favorite part of both of them. And I really love, I actually love going up the Golden Staircase there. It's just such a cool, like, feat of like engineering, but then also it's just like a great climb, and you end up, you know, you come up over this crest and there's this beautiful waterfall, and then you go up a little bit further and there's like these lakes and mountains. It's just glorious.
I've done the Golden Staircase three times now on the JMT, both, you know, all three times going southbound. And as much as you approach it and you're like, oh, this is gonna suck, I mean, this is like straight up for a while, it is just so incredible. It's so, you get up in a hurry and it's just gorgeous. And I don't know if you could see my background, that is Evolution Lake and Mount Darwin and Mount Mendel on this side. And there's really something to be said about walking on this little trail with the lake right next to you and these huge, huge towering mountains immediately just going straight up and kind of looming over you. There's nothing else like it.
Yeah. Yeah, no, there's so many sections of the John Muir Trail that is just mind-blowing. And evolution, that whole area, the mountains and the rivers and the lakes, it's all so amazing. And like you just can't experience it unless you just get yourself out there. And it's one of the things I love about that area is, you just it feels remote. Yet it is also kind of accessible. It's like fairly accessible. And it's just super beautiful.
Absolutely. Now, Ashley, you've had a lot of other adventures, and I'm afraid we're going to have to save some of those adventures for the next time you come on the podcast. Because
Yeah.
I do want to spend a little bit of time talking about the Women of the Wild Pod, and what was your motivation for starting that, and what can people expect to find when they tune in to the Women of the Wild Pod?
So Women of the Wild was started actually right before the pandemic. I started it December 2019, because I want the my goal was to kind of figure out a way to sort of build community. And within that community, then I could, help inspire more women. My big goal with it was to get more women in the outdoors. The thing that really spurred the podcast was I was actually in Utah and over Thanksgiving, and I went on a run with Sunny, my friend, who at the time we'd just met, and it was sort of one of those things where it was like, well, let's just go for a run and like have a chat. And we had such a good conversation, and we talked about women in the outdoors and empowerment and, outdoor ethics and just like all these great things. And I was like, man, I wish that I could record that and share it. And that kind of spurred the like first little thoughts of a podcast. And of course, I was like, I've never podcasted before. What am I like? This is impossible. I'm an introvert. I don't put myself out there. I don't go out and just like meet new people and start conversations. And I thought it was totally out of my ability to do, but I couldn't stop thinking about it. And so through the month of December, I was like slowly kind of doing some research and then came up with the name Women of the Wild. It just like popped into my head one day. And I was like, that's it, I'm doing it. Like, I'm just, what's the harm in trying, right? So I went ahead and recorded an episode with Sunny. She was my first guest. And she was, ooh, let me back up a little bit. She's the first person that I brought the idea to. And she was like, no, I think you need to do this. I think that this is necessary. And so I was like, well, okay, well, will you be my first guest? Said, yes. So recorded an episode, put it out there. It seemed to go over well. And then I was like, okay, let's see how this goes. Started recording more episodes and putting them out there. And then the pandemic hit. And then I found myself without much work. And a fair amount of free time to just focus on recording podcasts. And so I started doing more episodes more frequently and started gaining a little bit of traction and building a little bit of community, and was like, this is really cool. I think I mentioned to you probably before we started recording, I've been taking a little bit of an extended break from the podcast, but I do have episodes recorded, and I'm definitely feeling the itch to get them out there and in the world. But I interview people, women who are doing cool things in the outdoors, but I also interview women who are like, maybe focused on nutrition for ultra runners or nutrition for rock climbers or something like that. I actually recorded an episode with Fly Nutrition, she does a lot of the her name's Kylie. She does a lot of the nutrition articles for Trail Runner Mag. And so I've interviewed her just about like nutrition and runners. I've interviewed, women who just like decided to go out and do something really cool out their back door. I interviewed a woman from Washington who she decided just like of her own accord, There was no race. There was no FKT. It wasn't driven by anything other than she just wanted to do it. She rode 100 miles on her bike from her door, like her front door, to the trailhead for Glacier Peak. She climbed Glacier Peak and then rode her bike 100 miles back to her house. And she called it the Glacier Peak Century Sandwich. And I thought it was just so cool that she would want to do something like that out of just with nothing pushing her besides her own desire to do it. And so, yeah, just like a lot of different adventurous women doing different things in the outdoors. It's not all runners. You know, there's mountaineers and rock climbers and mountain bikers and kayakers. So a lot of different activities.
So many things in common with the John Freaking Muir Pod. I like to say that you know, the pod is, you know, we talk about through hiking a lot, but really it's about outdoor adventure. And there are outdoor adventure is, you think of it as the tree. There are so many branches on that tree, different types of adventures out there. And so it sounds like you're doing very similar things and talking to some great women out there. I'm going to drop some other names for you. Have you ever heard of Dina Zibaldo?
No, I don't. I'm not familiar.
She was a guide in Everest, and she actually won the World Guide Award. They give out one of those each year, and she was, I think it was 2014. She was the World Guide Award winner. She was a lot of fun to talk to. I just happened to have an in with her because she's my stepsister's friend. So out of nowhere, my stepsister says, "Hey, you should talk to Dina." I'm like, "Who's Dina?" And it was just a great interview. Tomorrow, I'm talking to Elena Osborne, Tip Tap. Who is from New Zealand. She's been on the podcast before and does a lot of great things out there as well. I had a third one for you. I'm talking to Ariel Scheip later this season. She's going to come on.
Yeah. The podcast. I'm familiar with her. Yeah.
Yeah. And then Amity Warm, Warme. She is a big wall climber who doing great things out there on big sheer faces of granite, which is just absolutely crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. No, they all sound amazing. And yeah, I'll have to re-listen to this podcast in order to get those names.
That's right. Okay. Well, at least, yeah, you're going to listen to at least one episode of this podcast. Yeah. Hey, I was going to ask you what's next, but I've got what's next for you. I think you should go for the FKT on the Barclays. What do you think? Barkley Marathons, FKT. Let's do it.
Well, that's a terrible idea.
And I've told Garmeyer, I said, "Hey, I'll volunteer to be your crew on the Barclays. Oh. When you go back to the Barclays, I'll volunteer to be on your crew." Same offer goes for you. So if you decide to take up that challenge, set an FKT on the Barclays, that would be, you've already got one crew member to help you out.
Okay. I'll keep that in mind. First, I'd have to get invited though. There's that whole, weird invitation only thing.
Yeah, it's an application process that is so top secret. I mean, you can't find it anywhere. You have to talk to the right people, and yeah, it's very mysterious. There's a lot of mystique about the Barclay.
Yeah, it's part of the draw, I guess. So.
Okay. Well, I definitely have to have you come back on for another episode because there's a ton of stuff we did not get to talk to. I really want to spend some more time with you talking about FKTs, other things that you've done out there, your longest trail run, the FKT that you're most proud of, the FKT where you shattered the previous FKT. I mean, there's all kinds of questions I have for you, but we're not going to get to them tonight.
Yeah. Well, you'd have to send me those in advance so that I could do my research. So I don't know. FKT that I shattered.
Okay. I'll send you those questions ahead of time.
Yeah.
All right. Hey, Ashley, you know where we are?
Where we are?
Yeah. Where are we?
On the John Freaking Muir podcast.
That is correct.
The pro tip insight of the week.
Where we are is we are at the pro tip insight of the week, where you get to share some trail wisdom with our listeners to make their next outdoor experience even better. I hope you held something back in the tank here. What do you have for us?
Don't be afraid to fail. I think so many people, especially going into things like FKTs, trail races, big adventures in general, are terrified to fail. And I think that there's so much that we can learn from failure. I think failure is a better teacher than success. And so going into something with the potential of failure, I think is a kind of a great place to be. Like when I did the John Muir Trail FKT, I knew that there was a pretty high possibility that I could fail, that I would have to be, that I would end up calling somebody like, hey, come pick me up at this trailhead. Because I just wasn't sure that I had it in me, but I did. And if I had been afraid of that failure and worried that, and let that, you know, affect my decision making, then I wouldn't have done what I did. And I wouldn't have had the experiences that I had. And there have been so many times that I've gone into an FKT or something and failed miserably. And I, you know, went through those emotions and was sad and angry or whatever. But then, you know, if you have the ability to reflect and look back and see what you did wrong and see what you could do right, what you could change, what can you learn from this experience is pretty profound. So I think that would be my big lesson.
Well said. Don't be afraid to fail. You show me somebody who has never failed, I'll show you somebody who's never learned anything. So I've learned a lot over the years. Let me tell you that.
Me too.
All right. So there you have it. That's it. This episode is just about in the books. Hope our listeners enjoyed our time with Ashley. I want to thank her for joining us this week. Ashley, how can our listeners keep up with you on social media, and where can they find updates on your latest adventures?
Yeah. So I'm pretty active on Instagram. That is like I'm most responsive on there. If you send me a message on there, I'll probably get it. So yeah, feel free to look me up on Instagram. My name is Ashley.Winchester, and my first name is Ashly. There's no E in Ashley. A lot of people make that mistake. So Ashley.Winchester. My Facebook is kind of similar. It pretty much regurgitates what I put on Instagram. So, but if you're a Facebook only user, you can find me on there too, Ashley Winchester. And that's pretty much it for socials. I have a Twitter. I never use it. It's one of those things where I'm like, I should probably start that at some point, but no. So yeah, you can look me up, follow me, send me a message. I'm happy to share any kind of knowledge, info, data.
Okay. Remember to check out the pod on social media as well. We are on Facebook, YouTube, Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok. No TikTok? I didn't hear TikTok in that list.
No TikTok. I actually do have a TikTok account, but I've never like signed up for it and then deleted the app because it's like, I can't get into it.
Yeah. My daughter forced me. She said, Dad, you got to get a TikTok. That's how you're going to reach people. TikTok, the new generation. So
that's what they say.
All right. And if you have comments or clips you want to share, you can send it to me at johnfreakinmuir@gmail.com. And just like there's no E in Ashley, there's no G in freaking. It's johnfreakin, no G, muir@gmail.com.
The Adventure Media Recommendation.
Speaking of my daughter, that's her pretending to be English on those little intros there. Ashley, I'm also looking to you to share a recommendation for a book, a movie, documentary, website, some kind of adventure media that's going to keep our listeners connected to the trail. We call this our adventure media recommendation. What do you have for us?
Well, first, someday I'm actually going to publish a memoir. It might be like 10 years down the road, but keep an eye out for that. It'll be full of adventure stories.
I've got a title for you. It should be called "I Want to Do Everything" with
I want to do everything. Chester. Leap of faith. Of course, I have to take this opportunity to plug Jason's documentary, Journey to 100. It's a film supported by Athletic Brewing that documents his journey to 100 FKTs. I make some appearances in the movie as well.
Okay, there you go. Tune in.
Yeah, it's a 30-minute documentary, Journey to 100. You can find it on YouTube or Outside Watch. But it is it's inspiring and definitely makes you want to get out and hit some trails.
What have we not asked you?
And before we wrap things up, just one more segment for you called "What Have I Not Asked You That You're Dying to Tell Us About?" What do we miss tonight? I mean, we missed a lot, but is there any nugget that you want to share with us?
Yes. So just quick story, a little background first. I was recently in Bhutan, which is a small country, like east of Nepal. It's like in the Himalayas. It's absolutely stunning country. It's so beautiful. But while I was there, I met his Majesty, the King of Bhutan, multiple times. But I went to this festival in the highlands of Bhutan called the Royal Highland Festival. And it's a festival that celebrates the culture in those highland communities up there. It's a really unique culture. They herd yaks. They use yak milk for everything. And while we were there, I was there with some other people involved with the race that I did in Bhutan. And the king comes up to us. His Majesty the King approaches us. And the race director looks at him and he goes, "We want to ride a yak." And the king goes, "You want to ride a yak?" It's like, "Yes, we want to ride a yak." And he's like, "Okay." We have some more conversation. The king leaves and we were kind of like, okay. And a few minutes later, this person comes up to us and they're like, come ride a yak. And we were like, no way. Oh my gosh. So we go and we got to hop on this yak that was like elaborately decorated in this beautiful saddle. And we're like led around and, you know, we all ride the yak. And so I like to say that I got to ride a yak because His Majesty the King made it so, which just like makes me so happy to be able to say that. By order of the king, I got to ride a yak.
Ashley, you are well connected. Well connected. His Majesty made that happen for you.
Yeah, yeah. Well, what's funny is about 20 minutes later, we saw His Majesty the King riding his own yak. So I think we inspired that.
I would assume that the king has his own yak. Yeah.
He has many. Yes. He has many.
All right. Hey, that's a wrap from the John Freakymere studio. Any shout outs to friends and family, Ashley?
Oh, always. Of course, shout out to Jason, who got me on this podcast. Shout out to, my mom and dad for raising me the way they did.
Okay. Well, thank you for tuning in. Always remember, the trail is the trail. It doesn't care if you want to go downhill. It doesn't care if it's almost dark and you're looking for a campsite. It doesn't even care if you have just spent the last few hours trying not to step on the hermit crabs. The trail is the trail. Embrace the suck.